Blog Talk Radio.
Appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services by Dr. Kathleen Carroll, a board-certified psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults. She's also board-certified in internal medicine and family practice. She's also an all-time triathlete, and if you have any problems breaking through with anything in life, or you're having any problems breaking through any wall in sports, give her a call at area code 813-689-2466. Hey, guys, before we get started tonight, I want to send out a request. I had a young 10-year-old seriously injured today, Michael Mudge. And we want to ask our listeners if they would just keep a good thought for Michael and a prayer. When I last left, he was taken to St. Joseph's Hospital, pediatric hospital, and was admitted to the neurointensive care unit. So I'm going to ask everybody just to keep a good thought this week for him. So how's everybody's week going, Ty?
Everything's going pretty well. We definitely want to send our prayers out to Michael and support his parents because I know it must be heart-wrenching for them. Things are going well. Our father, Melvin Parquet, has had successful surgery and is recovering well. And so Zito and I are pretty stoked about that. I got to see Zito spar a little bit in the gym this week. He looked pretty good. Couldn't tell he was in his 40s, I tell you.
I felt it. I definitely felt it. I want to say send my prayers out to Michael and his family. I want to say hello to you guys, and I'm glad to be back.
Great. Now, is Mel still in the Florida hospital over there?
Yeah, he's in Florida hospital in Orlando. That's exactly where he's at.
Okay. Well, we'll get in touch with him.
8818. So check
now that
out.
He's closer, maybe I'll get a chance to get over to see him.
He's closer now.
Yeah, I keep threatening to try to get to the East Coast, but something always happens. But we're going to our special guest tonight is Frankie Freight Train Philippone, the IBF light heavyweight champion. Frankie's going to talk about his last fight and one he's got coming up. And we're going to have, of course, the lovely and vivacious Dr. Chris is coming on. And if he can, we also want to send a good thought out to Dr. Ron, whose mother was admitted to a nursing home this week with Alzheimer's. It's been a sort of a rocky week here, but not as rocky as our last guest last week's fighter, huh? Seems that Mr. Cornflakes got crushed this Thursday night the arena in 2300.
Yeah, you know, I remember Russell was saying that it was pretty much a pick-em fight, but I personally thought Dusty Harrison Hernandez, or Dusty Harrison as he's called now, I thought he was a slight favorite going in. He was looked at as a golden prospect. When I first saw him, I remember Zito and I, we saw some things we liked, but we weren't impressed. He was in with a much, much smaller, much older guy. And, he was just getting hit too cleanly. So we saw some things that we thought needed to be ironed out before he could move to the next level. And in our conversation with Russell last week, he just kind of confirmed what Zito and I had seen a few years ago. With that said, I heard that Dusty was in a position where he was outboxing the guy but kind of got pulled into a brawl. Was able to win as I thought he would. He has more of an upside than Cornflake. Interesting nickname, as boxing usually does have those. So from what I heard, it was a brawl, but Dusty came out on top. So it's interesting to see what's going to be next for him, because I would expect a step up in competition. So because this was sort of a step up, so I kind of expect another step in the progression.
Right, Z.
Yeah. Progression. It has to be according to progression, because if you step up slightly too much, then things can start to happen. You can start to see some of the flaws. And in boxing, when you see flaws, it gets dangerous to the fighter. With that being said, I mean, he has an upside. Simple as that. And you can't go against a guy who has an upside. You bring him up right, and then you have to bring him up through competition. But a development fighter, you can't just, a lot of times, especially with the heavyweights, the developing fighters, their name gets big too fast. And then that demands a step up in competition to where, he's not a heavyweight, but at the same time, you don't want to step him up too fast. Especially promotion-wise, because you do want to hold on to him. But at the same time, you do want to develop him further in the progression. You don't want to keep lining him up against competition that's not going to help him develop. That's one thing. And that's what I mean when you say a step up. It's not necessarily level. It's just in competition, maybe experience. It's something different in the sense that, this guy is not a pushover. So that he needs a few more of those fights before you even start talking about a real step up.
Sure.
You know, one thing I think that makes Russell Pelt such credit to the sport of boxing is Russell doesn't blow smoke up your ass as most promoters do. You know, most promoters are going to tell you, yeah, I got this fighter, and he could be world champion in a couple of years. Not Russell, man. Russell tries to progress his fighters right, and he's very realistic about where his fighters are. He was very realistic about where Dusty is. You know what I mean? He didn't try to blow smoke up our asses and make Dusty seem like he was something that he wasn't. Dusty's a very young, still developing pro prospect. He's proven that he's gritty. He's proven he's got a long road to go. He also was very realistic with Jesse Hart. Jesse Hart was, after Deshaun Jackson, he was supposed to be fighting in a title eliminator. But after that performance, you know, Russell was very realistic and was like, look, this fighter needs, you know, more time to grow. So, you know, I think he's a true credit, not just to the history and the lineage itself of the sport going back to the heyday, but, you know, just a true credit to promoters in general. You know, I think if Bob Arum and Oscar De La Hoya and all these guys were a little bit more like Russell, we'd get the fights we want. And, you know, I think they'd be on free TV as well.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Yeah, Russell's also realistic about the judging too. He doesn't.
Yeah.
I mean, he's promoting, but if he doesn't like the judge's decision, I mean, he's vocal about it. And most promoters, you don't see them going against the judges. So I mean,
yeah. So Zito and I are sitting, I think it was at the 2300, and Russell and Zito get into a conversation about Russell, you know, talking about a bad decision, and it was a bad decision for one of his fighters. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Like I was just, we were really just struck by his integrity for the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love to have Russell on because he tells you just like it is, but he also gives you some insight into how the boxing game goes. I mean, you know, I didn't know that Atlantic City wasn't paying any money for people to come down here to box anymore. They're just giving away rooms. Well, the rooms aren't being filled anyway. So it's nothing out of their pocket to have a card down there anymore. You know?
No,
and that's exactly what he was saying. Why do it? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Nope. Nobody wants to go to Atlantic City anymore. You look at the problems that the city's having. It's all back on, and the city of Chester is going to run into the same thing. They're now bankrupt because they had a lot of money coming in from the Philadelphia Union. They had a lot of money coming in from the track and from Bally's, and they went out and spent it like there was no tomorrow, and tomorrow's here. Yeah, now they're in trouble.
Yeah, and so what's happening now is instead of fighting, you know, in Atlantic City, or like you said, Chester is also getting in trouble. Instead of fighting those places, they just go an hour and a half, 2 hours up the road and fight in at Madison Square Garden or at the Barclays Center, which is becoming a huge venue on the East Coast.
Right.
So boxing's back in the Mecca in New York now. And what's happening is these casino towns are going bankrupt, man. And like Russell said, they can't afford to pay anyone. So they're just trying to comp everyone. You know, and what that does, though, is if they comp the fighters, if they comp you know, the staff, the promotional team, they hope that the fights bring money to the casino, so they don't have money to give away at all.
Right.
So, what was the last big fight in New Jersey? Was that Hopkins and Kovalev? Because that was after Friday Ward. So yeah, I think so that was Hopkins.
Yeah.
I mean, what was that, 2014?
Yes.
So so we haven't had a big fight in Atlantic City in a couple of years now.
Yeah. Hey, see, you were talking about progression. What do you think about the WBO middleweight Billy Joe Saunders? He's going to defend against somebody. They don't have an opponent yet on the undercard for the Klitschko Fury, but he's talking about if he wins that, trying for Triple G. What's your thoughts on that?
All right, so Zito, did you want to take that first, or do you want me to?
No. Go ahead. I'm going to laugh for a bit, but go ahead.
Okay. Now, it's funny you're going to laugh because here's my thing. What I find funny or quite interesting is, you know, just not so long ago it was Billy Joe Saunders saying, you know, I wouldn't fight Triple G just yet. I'm not ready. Then he said that, you know, for me to fight Triple D, the money has to be right. Danny Jacobs' team said the same thing. One of Danny Jacobs' co-managers actually said, you know, this should be a pay-per-view fight, which already lets you know how the negotiations are going to go because, as we know, Danny Jacobs is not that level of fighter in regards to name recognition. I'm not, you know, going to say anything negative at all about his skills. He's a, you know, marvelous fighter. But as far as name recognition, he's not a household name, someone who you would think of as a pay-per-view. Golovkin and Lemieux only did, like, you know, 100,000, and Jacobs is moderately more popular than Lemieux, but he doesn't have a diehard following like Lemieux does in Canada. With that said, what I find quite funny, and I'm sure Zito finds quite funny, is before the Kell Brook fight, everyone, you know, Jacobs, Saunders, all these guys, Eubank, they all were saying, you know, we'll fight Golovkin in 2017, you know, late 2017. That fight needs time to build, yada, yada, yada. Kell Brook fights Golovkin. It's looked at as Golovkin's first real opponent, although Kell Brook was significantly smaller. Has a couple really, really good rounds. He was actually ahead on one of the scorecards. Most people had it a dead even fight at the time of the stoppage. Kell Brook looked like he rocked Golovkin with a couple clean shots, and he made Golovkin look vulnerable in some people's eyes. With that said, Golovkin still crushed his eye socket and, you know, won a fifth-round stoppage. And, you know, although, it, you know, it was the stoppage was really an injury due to Kell Brook's broken eye socket, you know, it was caused by Golovkin's punch. And the fact of the matter is it looked like, you know, Kell Brook was being broken down quite rapidly as well. With that said, it was due to the success that he had that now all of a sudden fighters have a bit of courage in when they want to step into the ring as far as what they're saying. Let Billy Joe Saunders fight his mandatory or fight his fight, and I don't even know if it's mandatory. The WBA has mandated Golovkin and Jacobs. He doesn't need Jacobs' belt to be the undisputed middleweight champion. He just needs Saunders. Jacobs' belt is the regular belt for the WBA. Golovkin has a super belt, but that fight has been mandated. So, you know, everyone is talking now that they felt he looked vulnerable, but again, who will put pen to paper? We know Chris Eubank Jr. talked a good game, but when it came time to putting pen to paper, his father had all sorts of demands that initially it essentially got the fight nixed and got Kell Brook to actually put pen to paper. So now that the man has looked vulnerable in some eyes, let's see who actually puts pen to paper and who just continues to talk on social media.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you said. And I'm going to bring it back to earlier, the first thing Butch said, progression. Billy Joe Saunders has to win his next fight, if it's mandated, his next fight, which is not guaranteed. And there you go. Once you start dealing with somebody, he's talking about he wins a fight or two, whatever, and then going to see Golovkin. You don't go from the middle of the mountain to the top of the peak. That doesn't happen. You have a progression decline. There's going to be rough spots. There's going to be different, you know, angles that you're going to have to go through. So you're not just going to, you know, that you don't do that successfully.
You know what?
Especially,
you know,
if you're not really built like that.
You know, it's funny, when Andy Lee and Billy Joe Saunders fought for that vacant belt, you know, a lot of the boxing hardcore public wanted Andy Lee to win, not because they favored Andy Lee over Billy Saunders, but because Andy Lee said, if I win, I'll fight Golovkin. And Saunders said, I'm not going to fight him just yet. Your money has to be right, yada, yada, yada. I think one of the reasons why Billy Joe Saunders is so emboldened, he's not a, you know, knockout puncher, but he's a very, very clever, crafty boxer who moves well, and he throws in combinations. And if anybody would have been emboldened by that performance, it would have been a guy like Billy Joe Saunders, who's looking at Kell Brook and saying, you know what, I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm a mover, I throw combinations quicker than Triple G, I'm rangier than Kell Brook. You know what? That guy's not so robotic. He's not the machine I thought he was, you know. And I can do what Kell Brook does, but because I'm bigger, I'm a natural middleweight, I could do it in spades maybe. So I could see why he would be emboldened by that. The fact of the matter is, as far as his progression, he's Billy Joe Saunders is the finished deal. He is what he is going to be. And he's just not the guy who is at the level where he will be able to beat Golovkin. Can he get a little bit more seasoning? You can always, you know, a younger fighter can always use a little bit more seasoning. But he essentially is the finished product. You know, he graduated when he beat Andy Lee. And you know what? Honestly, he has a better middleweight resume to a certain extent. He has Andy Lee and Chris Eubank Jr. And, you know, I take those two guys over essentially anybody else, basically over Golovkin's resume. So, I mean, he's fought quality competition. However, he's not ready for Golovkin, and he won't be. Golovkin's just a different animal. And I think what some people are waiting for, they were waiting for slippage, and he didn't look so great against Kell Brook. And I think some people are saying, you know what, he'll be 35. A little bit of movement gives the older, you know, legs a little bit of trouble. And I think that's what people are getting emboldened by. But you know, Zito, talking the talk and, you know, walking the walk are two different things, right?
Absolutely. But what I'm going to say is, and I can understand why Billy Joe would get confidence off of Kell Brook's performance. It's always said you're not supposed to, you know, you can get confidence off his performance, but that doesn't necessarily mean that performance is going to mirror yours. And then as though I'm saying that, Golovkin, and we were saying it, looking at it during the fight, and Golovkin even said it after the fight. I wasn't really thinking about defense. I was fighting him like he was a smaller man. I was trying to run through him. And that's essentially how he fought Kell Brook. That's essentially what he did. Now, Golovkin, you know, he's better in fights previous, and I'm pretty sure in, you know, fights, you know, in the future, his defense will be better against bigger people. I'm pretty sure his defense will be better. We see them fight. I forget the hard hitting guy, the short hard hitting guy,
Curtis Stevens.
Well, Curtis Stevens caught Golovkin pretty good, and Golovkin employed defense against him. He employed defense against Lemieux. He used his jab. He actually used very slow, you know, not straight backward footwork. Golovkin is capable of employing defense. That's why I think that, you know, you can get confidence over that. Danny Jacobs can do some of the same things too. But now all of a sudden Golovkin's like, all right, this guy's not, you know, he's not naturally that much smaller than
he's going to join Dr. Chris. Let's see what Chris has to say about it.
Hey, Dr. Chris.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Hey, Dr. Chris, how you doing?
Oh, enjoying the beautiful weather up here.
Oh, yes, it is, isn't it?
Sitting out on my porch, it's gorgeous. I'm not sweating to death. Christ. I hear you guys on. I hear what you said on Golovkin. You know, take his after-fight comment. I just turned it into a street fight. You know, he had no respect for that kid. He figured, I'm going to blow him the hell out of here. And I think the kid surprised him a little bit.
Yep.
And the hell, he's a little tougher than I thought he was, but he never tried to jab. He just wanted to go in there and knock him the hell out. He wasn't his best that night because he didn't have the right attitude. He had a little more respect for Lemieux. He fought him a little different. He jabbed better. He figured, I got a tougher opponent here. Lemieux was a tough guy and a bigger opponent. And this guy, he figured, hell, if I could knock Lemieux out like I did, this guy will be nothing. But he gave him a surprise. He turned into a decent-sized fighter that night. I mean, he must have starved to death as a welterweight. He probably didn't eat for a month, for Christ's sake. You know? He got a big body, big arms, big upper body. He's not a small man. But Golovkin just figured, the hell with it. I'll just go in there and take him out. Throw caution to the wind, which he did. He didn't look good. He didn't look his best. But, you know, how many guys look their best every single fight? He's having trouble getting up for a fight, you know?
Exactly.
Everybody has a bad showing once in a while. That kid gave him a nice battle, you know, and it was what it was. You know, he was overpowered by a guy having an off night. That's what it was, and the kid gave it a good account of himself. I think he'd be better off in the 154-pound division. You know, I think he was trying to set up a fight for against
Canelo.
The guy that's fighting tonight. Yeah, Canelo.
Canelo,
I think
yeah.
I think he'd give Canelo a hell of a battle. I mean,
you know, one thing I didn't like that I saw in Triple G, and it was something I had never seen before because he had never faced an opposition who was, number one, either capable enough from a skill standpoint or even brave enough. He finally fought somebody who threw combinations at him, right? He's, you know, guys just launch a punch at him because they're usually on the defensive. What I didn't like, Dr. Chris, I didn't like this at all. When you attack him, you know, and with this said, it would also take a special fighter. And I think Kell Brook has some special qualities, but it takes a, you know, a good fighter to beat Golovkin. It's no walk in the park. But when you start throwing combinations at him, he started looking like Arthur Abraham defensively. He shelled up.
No.
He didn't
nobody
looked
head. That bad.
Yeah,
no.
I mean, it wasn't, I mean, he shelled up. He didn't move his head, and then he would just launch a punch, and the guy, and then Kell Brook would dance away. But I noticed that every, you know, he would get hit, and he would just shell up. And I was like, oh, huh. So he'll punch when you punch, but he won't counterpunch your attack is what I noticed. That he just, you know, I mean, Abel Sanchez, his trainer, has done, to me, a marvelous job at transforming him to his quote-unquote Mexican style. From Golovkin used to be a more stand-up, straight European. But when he's attacked, and, you know, that's what I saw in him. I saw that stand-up, straight European style where he kind of stood stock still and just covered up. But he didn't move his seat at that particular time. He didn't move his head at all.
And just to chip in, I think I attribute that to him just trying to overpower Kell Brook. Kell Brook got sharp on him, and that, as you said, that surprised him. What Golovkin will do, and you're absolutely right, but to do that, you have to stop his momentum. And not
exactly.
That he's a mean overfoot guy, because he's going to counterpunch your punch when he's going forward. When he's in attack mode, he's going to do it. But when you stop that attack mode, or you stop, you make him think defense. And to do that, you have to throw combinations. You're absolutely correct.
Exactly.
To make him think defense.
Which is why I said it takes a certain type of fighter. It's not anybody can do this. You know, Kell Brook is just something because of his gifts and his speed. He was able to exploit a certain thing for moments. You know what I mean? That was it, though. But you noticed it, too, huh?
Well, I noticed that in the Kasim Omar fight. A guy who's going to throw punches all the time.
Yeah.
That's going to give Golovkin trouble because he's used to the stopping power. He's used to hitting you and then you're doing something different. You hit a guy and he keeps, you know, energized by me punching. Well,
he's not used to having to react to your offense. That's what it is.
All the time. He's used to stunning
your
offense.
He's used to parrying a shot here and there and stepping in. You know what I mean? But when you forced him to stop or when you force him to have to play defense, he plays 100% defense. You know what I mean? He goes straight to defense. So,
When his feet stop.
And, you know, that's the one time I thought Kell Brook, you know, rocked him. You know, say what you want. I know he has a great chin. He got rocked, though.
He made his legs do the dip a little bit.
Yeah, and what it was because all of a sudden Golovkin stopped. Well, Kell Brook stopped him. And then he landed those combinations. Golovkin just covered up and kind of waited for the storm to end. You know what I mean? And in that moment, I was like, that's what Abraham does. You know what I mean? But, you know, because Golovkin is so technically and fundamentally sound, you know, he can basically parry a shot and attack, you know, quick enough. And he's so good with his feet. But, that's what happened. Yeah, I did notice that with the Uma fight too, Zita.
Don't you think Golovkin threw caution to the wind? He just said, I'm going to go out here and head hunt. I've never seen him head hunt that bad. He's usually 50-50 body head, and that night he was probably 90-10 all to the head trying to kill that kid. I think he wanted to get him the hell out of there, and I think he just threw caution to the wind and made him – you saw the worst side of him. When he does that, he's not the same fighter.
According to what I read after the fight in post-fight comments, he said that when Golovkin came back after the first round, Abel Sanchez said, why are you trying to box this guy? Go get rid of him. You know, he's smaller than you. And that led to what was almost a disastrous second round for Golovkin, you know, where he was really just walking in. If you watch the beginning of the fight in that first round, you know, he started the way he normally starts. Shell Brook, you know, got some things going in that first round. And I don't think, you know, Abel Sanchez liked what he saw. You know, I thought Abel Sanchez said, look, why are you trying to box the faster guy when you're so much bigger and stronger than him? Just go take him out. And, you know, it put Golovkin at more risk, but, you know, he broke his eye socket in the same round that he got rocked in. So.
Hey, guys, we're joined by...
Was that the diagnosis, fractured... Orbital REM up there?
Yeah, they showed it. He has to have surgery and everything, so...
Hey, guys, we're joined by one of the fastest set of feet and arms and punches in his class and in the Virginia Beach, Newport News area, Frankie the Freight Train Filippone. How you doing, Frankie?
I'm doing well. Just listening
good.
To your commentary.
Uh-huh. You want to add anything to that?
Frankie, yeah, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, guys? I can tell you, I'm going to give you the recipe to beat Golovkin right now. I'm going to just give it to you right now.
Okay.
It's basically what you all said. You need a guy that's going to be the boxer. You don't need a guy that's going to bang. Kell Brook got hit because he stayed stationary and he got caught up on those ropes. And ultimately, he hurt Golovkin in the second round, and that kind of shocked everybody. But I tell you this, if Kell Brook would have just stayed on his bicycle and boxed the mess out of him, he could have had a decision. He could have had a decision. But when you got Golovkin standing in front of you, walking you down, it makes it for a long night. You got to have some serious cardio.
I'll tell you what, Frank. I agree with everything you said, but that's not Kell Brook's style. If you see him right as a welterweight, he moves his feet, but he moves his feet educationally for distance. He doesn't move his feet for excess. And when you deal with Golovkin, you have to kind of move your feet. You have to move them urgently, educationally urgent. And Kell Brook is not that kind of guy. He'll push his – he's used to having, you know, the size with him, so he can wrap up
right.
or push off his opponent. And you can't do that with Golovkin.
You know what? Kell Brook is one who you saw it in the Sean Porter fight. He's a methodical fighter. You know what I mean? He really doesn't like to move about the ring. He'll move if he has to, but he a lot kind of like you've grown into, where instead of moving about the ring, you just move that half a step to throw your shot.
Right.
Kell Brook, and his weakness is he has tended to back straight up to the ropes, but he's always been able to get away with that because he's the stronger guy. I remember I'm sitting back watching the Brook Golovkin fight with Zito. And in the first round, Brook backs up to the ropes. It's right when he hurt Brook. And Brook goes to grab him, and Brook just couldn't hold him. And Zito, the first thing Zito said, oh, man, you're not strong enough to grab this guy, are you? And that was the difference. If Brook had his durability and his pop and his strength and had that kind of style like an American, he would also have to have his fundamentals. Then I would think he had a path for victory. I didn't think Brook would do as well as he did just from a stylistic standpoint, let alone a size matchup.
Yeah. You need a guy to beat Golovkin, you need a guy that has some really quick reflexes like Lobachenko. I'm going to tell you right now, the way that guy can move and get out of the way. If you Golovkin would never, he wouldn't know what to do. He'd be seeing, you know, like Kell Brook said, he saw five people in there after his orbital socket was broke. If you got a guy like Lomachenko in there, hey, it's done. It's a wrap.
Man, Lomachenko is like a hip hop dancer from the 80s, man. He's all over the place.
It's
love
crazy.
That dude is something, man. That dude is something.
I was like thinking about just. I wish I had the ability to just move like that. That's just. I mean, it's poetry. It really is. It's impressive to watch.
And you know what, Frankie? You could watch his footwork, and it's just not like you can't emulate it. It's, you know what I mean? It's his footwork. Honestly, is a gift. Like speed is a gift for one person, or power. It's just like it's really innate to him. You know what I mean? It's amazing to me.
Not only yeah, that, huh? His head movement, his bending at the waist,
yeah,
upper body.
That's
movement.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, you could see guys like, you know, when you had like Pernell Whitaker and some other guys that really could get out of the way, but this guy's taking it to a new level. I mean, it's amazing. So
you know what, with Pernell Whitaker, he kind of, you know, different style obviously than James Toney. But
yeah.
What I like about these guys is they just stand right in front of you and make you miss. With
Loma right,
Tenko,
make you look
cool. I've never seen anyone be able to cut an angle like Lomachenko, though.
Right.
And punch.
I mean,
yeah.
And punch.
Yeah.
You make
yeah. I mean,
really, every time you miss.
I mean, he
right.
really fights
yeah.
in a small circle around his opponent. It's like crazy to watch, man.
Yeah. He brings new meaning to make you miss, make you pay. So, you know, I mean,
so
it's just
Frank,
it's what it is.
With that said, is Lomachenko one of the fighters you like to study or, you know, different fighters you like to take things from?
I like to, you know, currently, I mean, I've been watching a lot of his fights. Obviously, I'm trying to just pick everything, you know, pick everything up from, you know, different places.
Right now.
I'm still trying to just maintain my current progression. And, you know, I would love to have the resume of Golovkin when you can stand in front of the ring when they're announcing you and say he's knocked out in the last 8 years, he's knocked out every opponent. I'd like to have that on my resume. It's just not. It's probably not going to happen. But
anyone.
but I can tell you, you know, yeah.
Hey, Greg, there's never been 160-pound Willie Pep in the history of boxing.
It's going to occur.
Yeah. We could dream about it, but it's
right.
never going to occur. And
yeah,
Lomachenko, I have the same feeling for him you have. He's a recreation from the 20s and 30s, you know, when Pep and some of those great Benny Leonards were fighting.
Right.
He's an exceptional. I was shocked when I watched him.
I just don't know how you develop that sharp of skill, because it seems like he sees it. He's like two steps ahead of you. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And it's really, you know, I just can't think like that, because then I got to think, okay, move, punch. I don't have the mental capacity to focus three steps ahead of me. I'd rather just, you know, I see it, punch you, and then I move out of the way. That's it. That's how I roll.
I'm really curious to see how, and I said this to Zito once, I'm really curious to see how his style ages. You know, he's still, what, 27, 28? You know, I'm curious
right.
to see what he's going to be like at 33, 34.
Right.
When the legs, you know, are, you know,
right.
aren't quite bending the way they used to. I'm just curious.
Absolutely.
You know, I think he has a high IQ as a fighter.
Right.
And you know, I think guys with high IQs, you know, as fighters in the game are the guys that age well.
And I agree. Right. I think some of the things you got to look at, too, is the genetics of the fighter, the body. I mean,
yeah.
some of these guys have these quick twitch fibers that you just – some people say you can train. Some people say you can't. I mean, when you have like that, when you can move and you can be quick with reflexes, I mean, it's you know, I used to, like I said, starting out in my career, I thought it was best to move out of the way, but then I realized I was moving too far out of the way. I wasn't capitalized on that. Now I'm trying
right,
to
right.
stay into the right. where I can get a punch off and still miss. And, you know, I think Lomachenko, like I said, he's right there. It's like his foot. You've seen those videos where those guys are boxing, they're straining. They got one foot in a tire and one foot out. And they're like, it's like that little circle that this guy is in.
Yeah, man. Yeah, literally.
You know,
he's boxing like he literally boxes circles around his opponent. Literally.
Right.
It's literally, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
but,
he's a guy I like to watch, too, just as far as his angles, man.
Yeah.
You know, he really takes advantage of being a southpaw like yourself, and he really steps around that lead
right.
left foot all the
right.
time of his opponent,
yeah.
man. And
it's,
you know,
yeah.
you see him fighting guys from behind him.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. punch muscle. I mean, he doesn't rely on one single punch. I mean, he can throw the uppercut.
Right.
He can throw the lead right uppercut. He can throw a left uppercut.
Right.
He can throw hooks.
Right.
I mean, the guy, he can 1-2. There's nothing that you really can time and say, oh, he's throwing this a little too much. I'm going to catch him when he's throwing this. Not when he
right.
throws everything kind of whenever it's appropriate.
So
yeah.
the guy lost one
yeah.
fight as an amateur in like 365 and avenged that two times over. You know what I mean?
Right.
Really,
yeah.
Yeah, he really is that dude. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Well, I'll give you guys a little bit of insight on what's going on with me. So we were trying to lock in a deal with Callum Smith.
Oh, wow.
For his in
for
the UK? WBC. Yeah, over for October 15th. We're optimistic. We've been training, so I would imagine if they were gonna take the or take the fight, that they would have called us by now. But I know how this boxing game works. Sometimes they wait to the last minute and hope to catch you sleeping. So unfortunately for them, if that's the goal they're trying to do, it's not gonna work. So.
For those of you who don't know, Callum Smith's brother is fighting Canelo tonight. Liam Smith is the brother of Callum Smith.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And he don't have a chance. But, you know, I don't think...
That would be a nice paycheck, Frankie.
It would be for his belt, the WBC. I think he's got the international or the silver international, something like that. So we've been in talks with the WBC about, you know, if that doesn't pan out, that we could potentially do a title fight for the WBC somewhere. We gave them our video that I sent to you guys as well, and they liked it. So I think that's the type of champion they're looking for, somebody that's the people's champ, somebody that cares about the community, not just stands just for boxing, but stands for everything
right.
else. So hopefully... we're looking at a fight November 11th. Hopefully to try to get it on CBS or CBS.
Whoa!
Sports.
I've been
moving. I've been making moves since the last time you talked.
Yeah,
I see.
Tell us about it.
It's time to put some
Frankie,
muscle.
You know what,
muscle.
Hey Frank, you know what Virginia Beach needs? Another
What's
young
that?
Millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
And he's coming up.
I'm trying to make it.
There you go.
So you're the choice of the town.
I tell people I'm the face of Virginia Beach, so I'm ready to go.
There you go.
So I think you know, in the last two fights, you know, we're still just building, and we fought outside August 25th at the beach. That was a nice venue outside, perfect weather. There was some complications, though, as far as lighting. There wasn't enough lighting out there. It was really hard to see my opponent. So I got hit with some shots that I didn't see coming. but I can tell you this, a lesser fighter would have fallen because he caught me a couple good times, and I thought, where did this guy come from? You know, like, who has this guy been fighting? So, and, you know, it's hard. Here's the biggest thing about fighters. We all like to look at tape, and we all like to, you know, dissect our opponent and stuff like that. I'm one of those guys. I like to look at it, but I don't like to put too much weight on it. And unfortunately, I went against my rule this time because I was looking at all his fights. And, you know, he normally kind of seemed like he would gas out a little bit around 3-4 and then, you know, come back on strong during the later round. I mean, obviously, we only did a 6-round fight because his promoter was Diane Fisher from Jersey. But the company that was helping her put her on, they didn't want to do anything real big. It's the first thing, first show on the beach. And they did what they did was East Coast Surfing Championship. It was a week-long thing. So this event brings 50,000 people here, you know, every year. So we had a good crowd. But I can tell you, the 6-round fight definitely played into his hands a little bit more. I felt like putting him in deep water around 7 and 8 would have I could have got him out of there. But he came to punt. He came to fight. And when you got a guy that went, you know, 8 rounds with Jeff Lacy, you know, and took those shots, I mean, he wasn't going to go down easily. But he came in overweight. He came, you know, obviously a bigger guy. And it cost him, you know, monetarily. And then, you know, the loss hurts him more than the money. But, you know, I can tell you, we're excited to see where this year and next year will go.
You know, Frankie, you know, with a lot of these fights now, because your name is starting to grow in stature in the sport, you kind of are these guys' Super Bowls. So
that
guy is going to train a little harder for a Frankie Philip fight because this means a step up for him. That's a tremendous step up for him.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
I mean, you're kind of at that point now.
Yep. And you know, the sad part, too, is, you know, you try not to look at records and say, okay, well, this guy's lost, you know, 15 fights and he's won 10 or whatever the number is. But, you know, you look at it, you're okay, well, if you lose to a guy that's 1-9, your career, it takes a huge hit. You know, if you beat a guy that's 1-9, then they're like, oh, he's supposed to beat that guy. You know, and you got to dominate them. So this stage, you're right. This stage in their career, It's taken me a long time to get here. I had to take every hard road I could, you know. But I'm a better fighter and better person for it, so I'm glad. But one of the things that, yeah, you're right, and even in the gym, you know, we've seen this transition in the gym. Some of these guys, they come in there and they're trying to take my head off in the sparring because this is they want to be where I'm at.
Exactly.
And, you know, I try to tell them, I say, hey, I'm going to let you hit me a couple of times. And then when you're done, it's my turn. So, you know, be prepared, you know, for what's coming next. So, but, you know, we're training. We're kind of figuring out that we're going to try to hover around 168 and then around 162 because we like to make a play for a 160 title. I'm watching you know, the Willie Monroe Jr. and Rosado fight pretty closely too at 160. You know, they're looking at to get, you know, a fight with Canelo after this. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the 160 division and the 168 division pretty hard. I won't go back to 175, that's for sure. So be fighting Kovalo or Andre Ward's out. But, you know, so, I mean, unless the money's right. Now, you know, if it's $1 million payday, maybe I might go in there and take a couple punches and make it look good. you know, but those guys are just much bigger than me. I don't plan on
right.
it. And that's going to be an interesting fight anyway, the Ward and Kovalev. So I just, you know, we'll see what happens with that. So,
what's
your
take on that
so
fight?
I can tell you, you know, they're both same age. You know, Ward's got most of the experience as far as rounds. I think he's got about, you know, 218 rounds, about 114 for Kovalev. But Kovalev's knocking people out. So it's I think it's going to be speed versus power. I really do. I think if Ward's very dominant. He's very meticulous on his fight style. Kovalev's got some really big wins over some really big names. So, and Ward, like I said, his last fight, I mean, that was just everybody knew he was going to beat his last guy. I think it's going to be a good fight. I think if Ward stays on his game plan, I think it's going to be Ward in 12, you know, for a decision. But, you know, Kovalev is going to be there the whole step of the way.
Hey, Frank,
I
got a question.
Go ahead.
No, I got a quick question to ask you. As you've gotten better as a fighter and as you've progressed in this game, you know, there are levels to this, and you've moved up
right.
the levels, and you're fighting better and better competition. I'm just curious if you could tell us and our listeners, what's the you know, some of the differences between the levels of competition, right? You know, what's the difference between, you know, a 1-9 guy and a 9-1 guy? Where do you see
right.
the differences as a fighter in the ring? You know, with all, you know, all anybody that laces up gloves and, you know, gets
right.
hit in the head, you know, they have a certain amount of courage and heart and respect that has to go out. But what are the differences
Absolutely.
You see? Is it technical, fundamental, athletic?
Yeah, I think the first thing you notice is the discipline. You know, so you get guys that come in, and like this last guy, I mean, he was 2 pounds overweight, and he didn't make – he's like, it's not a title fight, so why are you making a big deal about it? I said, it's the fact of that we're professionals here, and the contract says no more than 168, you know, and it matters. So, you know, one is the discipline. Two, fundamentals are big because it depends on – and you have to look at – when I look at fighters, I look at – it's like a family tree. It gets really in depth because I look at every person they fought and who they fought and who they fought because I want to see what level of competition they've been involved in because I think fighting the better competition, it makes you better as a fighter. If you continue to fight pro debuters and stuff like that, those guys just aren't – there's a lot of nerves that come into it. So when you got a guy that's, you know, 1-9, you know, or 1-5, he's still – craving for that win, but fundamentally he just doesn't have it.
Yeah.
You know, either he's taking a fight on short notice or he just doesn't have it. So you can see a little bit in their technique, I guess the best way to say it. And the guys that are have these good winning records, they've been pushed into the right places. So you can tell their level of opposition, they've been stepping it up the proper way. And then their boxing fundamentals, you might not have that same the same looks, the same open opportunities that you do with a guy that's 1-9 or 1-5, or, you know, somebody that's upside down. But see, you can't – the big thing, though, with the listeners is you can't discount those guys because every game, it's one punch. One punch that changes it all. And you can you see it time and time. You're like, man, I didn't think that was going to happen. For me, I'd rather knock the guy out because it makes it easy at night for me. But rounds are important to me. And, if I can show that I'm fighting or throwing 80 punches a round for 10 rounds or 12 rounds, then that shows that, and it lets these other guys know, these other promoters know that I'm ready for this to step up. So I think discipline first and technique second, and that's where I've noticed the biggest difference. And for me, I've just stepped up to training harder. Cardiovascular has been amped up, two or three times more than we normally would do. Boxing drills, and the hard part is about boxing drills, I've kind of, I wouldn't say slacked off on that, but my trainer is a captain in the police department, so he's just recently got promoted, so there's a lot more job responsibilities for him. So he and I haven't had the same schedule for the last couple of days, in the last couple of weeks, so we're trying to get that back. But with a big fight like what we were talking about with Callum Smith, we were talking about taking a month and a half off from work and training, and really saying, okay, let's make this legacy count. Let's make, we don't want this fight on television or this fight, out of, going across his home country and going, oh man, isn't this another Virginia fighter or just another United States fighter? He gets knocked out or he doesn't have a good showing. So I think, that's my goal, is to really affect push my weight around in this sport. And if I never get to that world title shot, then fine. But I'm pushing for every opportunity I can. And it's just there's a lot of politics. And, that's the hardest part for me, is getting through the red tape. So, because I don't have those big promoters. I don't have a big-time manager. I like to keep some of my money. So I don't want to pay a guy 30. I don't want to pay a guy 30%. To make the fight, or I do a good job of putting my stuff out there and calling these different promoters, and I have some good people in my corner that will do it for me as well. And I think with this potential CBS fight November 11th, I think we hooked up with a guy named Jack Fulton with International Championship Boxing, and I think he's going to be starting to do some things in 2017 I think we're going to make it work. 2017 will probably be our year, and hopefully we can make some. But we are getting the bigger fights, the bigger names, and there's a lot of guys that have called me for sparring. Like Andre Ward's camp called me for sparring. Jamel and Jamal Charlo, they called me for. Ronnie Shields called me because they needed left-handers, and they need good left-handers. Right. And there ain't a whole lot of people out there. Like Saki Obika's camp called us. Andre Durrell. There's been a lot of big names that have called us, and we haven't been able to make that because of my police schedule. So hopefully in 2017, where I'm at now at the police academy, I'm able to take a little bit more time off. I'm not dedicated and tied to the street per se.
I tell you, Saki Obika is one of the few fighters who could touch you through your headgear with his head. Through his head butt.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Saki Obika
is
something else with his butts, bull.
Yeah, when he was training for Adonis Stevenson, they called me to go down to Florida and train. And, I jumped at the opportunity. We couldn't make it work. So, it is what it is.
That would be great. Those would be some great round experiences for you with Saki Obika too, man. You would see everything.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my thing. If I could get in just with a couple of those guys, just to get the experience and get some of that world class, information from like guys like Ronnie Shields those are the experiences you can't get back. And if you came up to me and said, man, you're a good fighter, you might not be top quality, I might be like, okay, well, maybe I'll look at that as a positive, and a silver lining. So, but I tell you, I'm just enjoying being where I'm at. I love the fight game. I love the fight. That's one of my favorite things to do as far as boxing. And then, if I can reach a couple kids and they can live through me, Yeah, I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to do.
That's all right.
Yeah. So, but hey, I'll tell you, you know, it's one of those things. My two kids had soccer this morning. You know, I'm one of those soccer dads that, you know, I'm running up and down the field. I think every parent, they don't know how to take me, so because I'm so amped up all the time. You know, it's just, but that's how I am. That's how I am.
Chris, you had a couple questions for Frankie.
I just spent 4 hours this afternoon in my two grandsons' football game. I mean, it's hard to stay awake in the stands, but, you know, you got to be there.
Yeah.
I was going to those games when it was 95 out. I was dying. I can imagine how they felt. No wonder they didn't want to be there. Jesus. But,
yeah, you're
right. You know, yeah, you got to go.
Yep.
They look for you. But today it was cool, beautiful up here. I imagine it's nice down there, Frank.
Oh, yeah.
It was a little
cold at first, and then it was like in the 80s, high 80s. It was nice. Nice breeze.
A little warmer down there than up here.
Yeah.
You got that Gulf Stream. How far from the Gulf Stream is Virginia Beach?
I mean, it's a couple states up. I mean, we're you know, but we still get a lot of humidity here. So, it's starting to cool out. Morning time, it's a 70, 71,
yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. you know, somewhere around there. So, but when the sun comes out, you know, I was wearing sweatpants and I was wearing track pants and a T-shirt because I was like, well, I'm going to run after this. And I was like, nah, forget that. I'm going to go eat lunch. I'm going to work out tonight, you know, as, you know, probably 9 o'clock tonight. So, just before when my kids go to bed, that's try to alleviate the time or at least have the time I can spend with them while they're awake. When they go to sleep, I'll go work out until about 11 or 12 o'clock, and then I'll come home and sleep. So,
you know, Frankie, they published Klitschko's workout schedule in a magazine, the Mail magazine. He does all the training at night. He never gets up early in the morning, ever early, to do road work.
Yeah.
And he swims. He has weightlifting exercises. You know, he breaks it all down. Everything's done after 4 o'clock. Never early.
Yeah.
It's the old joke. I fight at night. Why don't I train at night? You know.
Right. Yeah. A lot of times we do train at night as it gets closer to the fight, just to try to have that. But you know, we're going back old school too. We swim in. We chopping wood. We're kind of trying to go old school. You know. There's a lot of new functional fitness out there now that, you know, that a lot of fighters that didn't make it, you know, back in the day didn't have that stuff. So we're trying to go back. They call me the throwback mm-hmm. fighter, so that's what we're going to give the people. So,
mm-hmm.
so we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. So November 11th, we're hoping those deals will come through, and we're probably going to take. We got a couple of opponents on the roster. One was a two-time junior welterweight or junior middleweight WBA champ. So hopefully he'll take the fight and I can get some of that star power by beating him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And where's it going to be, Frank?
Well, what do you think of the Canelo fight? You guys haven't discussed it tonight. What do you think, guys? What do you think, Greg?
I can tell you this. Puncher's chance with Liam Smith. I think Canelo's going to stop him sometime in the later rounds. I'd say past 7 or 8, he'll stop him. I mean, Liam Smith has knocked out his last 8 opponents. But I just think Canelo's got the superior boxing ability.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, he looks so good against Amir Khan. Amir Khan dropped his left hand so low, somebody from the first row could have hit him with a right hand. I mean, you know, if he was watching the fight, he could have reached him. I mean, he put an awful defensive performance on. Awful.
Yeah.
Canelo just killed him with that right hand.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see what it does money-wise, you know.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see that fight. What are they charging tonight? 50, 60, 70? What's going
on? $64.99.
Oh, no.
60.
Yep.
Yeah, 65.
$64.99.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. You know what? The funny thing is I actually think it's going to be a pretty entertaining fight. I think Smith does some things
that could trouble Canelo. I really think it comes down to his strength and his durability.
Right.
But he digs, man. He throws well to the body. And so I think there's some things he could do. Canelo's definitely a class ahead. I like Canelo to win the decision. I don't think he's going to stop Smith, though. I'm betting on Smith's durability, and I think he's going to push Canelo to fight harder at times than he wants to. But I like Canelo in a clear decision.
I agree to a point, but as durable as Smith is, I just think he's going to have to totally change his game to a certain extent. He's going to give Canelo problems because Canelo has a tendency of either kind of waiting and getting his breath together. He fights in spurts. Smith could take advantage of that, make him fight all of the time. I just think that Canelo, he's too inept of a counterpuncher. And
right.
He counterpunches in combinations. And Smith is a guy who's going to be busy. He'll be right in front of you, and that's a recipe for getting punched with counterpunches.
Right.
But I don't think he's that durable to keep doing that all fight long. I think Canelo's
right.
going to stop. Smith's going to change. He's going to see Smith not as engaging as much. I just think he's going to get broken down. Half of it he's going to do the work himself.
I completely agree. The only reason why I don't think he's going to stop him is because I don't think Canelo's going to do the work to stop him. He doesn't.
Yeah.
Bigger guys, he tends not to get out there one punch, and I don't think Smith is as reckless as James Kirkland. And I think he's smart enough to get out. And I think, and Canelo doesn't chase, So I think I can see him hanging around. But I could be wrong.
Yeah,
we'll see.
We've all been wrong at one time or another.
Oh, my God. Yeah, especially when it comes to predicting fights.
It's kind of like the weatherman.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. That was Jake LaMotta's favorite comment. Jake, who's going to win the fight tonight? He said, I haven't spoke to Rocky yet, meaning Graziano. He said, whoever Graziano picks, bet on the other guy. He said, mortgage your house and bet on the other guy. Rocky ain't been right in 20 years.
Right.
It's hard
to
predict a fight.
Know.
Very hard.
Yeah.
Unless they're like Amir Khan and Canelo, I thought Amir Khan would give him a better fight. I didn't realize that he jabbed and dropped his left hand so low. I mean, that was awful.
It's that questionable jaw now, that questionable chin now on Amir Khan.
Yeah.
So. You know what? If you watch that fight, Canelo was on his way to outboxing him, even if he didn't knock him out. I mean, Khan is just so vulnerable defensively because he has a tendency to pull his straight back, get his chin in the air, and drop his left. And Canelo was setting that shot up. But, I mean, the problem with Amir Khan, he has not the best chin, but he gets it hit.
Right.
He's not a perfected either.
Right.
Amir Khan is an offensive fighter. He's an offensive juggernaut. With that being said, he's a totally offensive fighter. His mind frame is to get at you. When he has to think defense, it's always get out. How he gets out is not really as concerned as he must get out. And that's how he fights. And with that, if you're going to fight totally offensive-minded, you can always be set up. The guy's going to always know where certain parts of you are going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The guy told me that a long time ago, my trainer told me, for every offensive move, there's a defensive move. And you better know both. Or you're going to get your nose bent. And it's
absolutely.
No fun. It's no fun to make a mistake in there. You pay dearly, and when you go up like these guys say, you go up a higher level of competition, you pay dearly for your mistakes.
Yeah.
And like you said, Liam Smith and both Callum Smith, they both go to the body real well. I think so. It could be a factor if Canelo allows him to stay in the pocket. So we'll see. It's gonna be interesting and. Hopefully I'm right. Stoppage in the later rounds, I'll start.
If I can round up three or four guys, I'll pay the $65.
Exactly.
I'm going to watch it next week.
Next week.
Or tomorrow morning.
Watch some highlights.
Well, guys, we're at the end of our time limit here. Frankie, I really appreciate you coming back on, and you know, we really think a lot of you. We're totally behind you. I'm going to send you one of our shirts, maybe wear it in a ring sometime. But
hey,
we just got some new shirts we're going to send up.
Yeah, absolutely. Send it to me.
Yeah, I will. We want to thank your family for allowing us to take time away from them. But I know you're a very busy man. I appreciate you for the and the Blue Line appreciate you like everybody else. So
yes, sir.
Thank you very much again. And
all
good
right.
luck on the 11th.
Frankie, good luck to you,
yeah.
buddy.
Hey,
good luck,
I'll keep you guys posted. Yeah, I'll keep you guys posted on everything. And then if it's not the 11th, it'll be somewhere else, and we'll take care of business.
Sounds good.
All right. Yes,
Frankie,
sir.
Good
thank
luck.
You guys. Yes, sir. Hey. I appreciate it. Okay. Bye-bye.
Chris, you want to lead
hey,
us out?
Hey, Frank.
Yes.
Frank, you want to send me one of them T-shirts?
I got
a 46 chest.
I just got them.
And a 32 waist. You got any to fit me? How about a custom?
You said a 32 inch chest and a 46 inch
You might have to send
waist.
A custom cut. 46 to 48 chest, 32 waist. All right?
Okay.
Custom. Give me a custom one. All right. All right, guys. Talk to you next week. See you now. Bye now.
Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, man, it's been a great show. Always love having Frankie Philippone on. And hearing the news we heard today from Frankie shows that good things can happen to good people. So that's great to hear. We wish Frankie all the best. It's great talking to Dr. Chris, Butch, Zito. Always a pleasure. Bob is our co-pilot. See you all next week.
Okay. Z?
Oh, man, it's always a pleasure to talk to Frankie. Definitely want to thank Frankie. Always a pleasure to be on the show with Dr. Chris, so want to definitely thank him. These shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
Okay, I want to thank you guys and Frankie. He's always been available to us anytime we wanted to talk to him, and he is moving up, which is a great news for all of us. Chris is always there for us as a historian, and you guys just carry the show with all your knowledge. And we want to send our very best thoughts out to Mr. Mel. At the Florida hospital, and we'll get over to see him sometime. I'll give him a call tonight, and we'll get over there. Hopefully, get over there sometime this week. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please just let them know you know they're there. A handshake, a wink, anything you want to do is great that they're grateful for. The biggest thing is that you could say to anybody in uniform is stay safe, my brother or my sister. These programs are also brought to you in grateful appreciation to the men and women who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Rinolfo Crispin, Lakeland PD. Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Sheriff Chief Al Hogle, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Sergeant Robert Wilson, Philadelphia Police Department, Louisiana Trooper Steve Vincent, Harris County Deputy Darrell Goforth, Prince William County Deputy Ashley Gidden, Houston, Texas Officer David Huffer, Hillsborough County Deputy Chief Deputy Charlie Kotloff. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the winds and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a good week.
Shemalek ma yelama Shemahezah yelama Sona shene vorat fet Hakuig again ma yelama